time to cast off on a new adventure. This is Real Adventures with Patrick Dangerfield and Aaron Hadgood.
Good morning and welcome to Real Adventures from wherever you are listening right around the country. Patrick Dangerfield and Aaron Hadgood joining you this morning to talk all things fishing, boating and the great outdoors. This is our 2021 AFL Grand Final edition that's happening over in Western Australia later this evening. The Western Bulldogs taking on the Melbourne Demons in what promises to be a wonderful AFL Grand Final. We're going to dissect it a little later in the show. We're going to go through all the matchups, mids versus forwards, the two powerhouse teams that have been so successful right throughout the year. So gearing up this week is all centered around the AFL Grand Final. But before we get to that, let's talk a bit of fishing. Good morning, Aaron. Have good.
Good morning, Patrick. Pleasure to be here. Unfortunately, my Cattery mob hasn't made it to the Grand Final, but it looks like it's going to be a cracker game. Like you said, two informed teams. The Bont is playing not too bad footy, as well as those other two fellas in the midfield, Petrarca and Oliver. So I'm looking forward to asking you a few questions and talking a little bit about the game that we love. And it's, to be honest with you, it's gotten me through the lockdown, Patrick. It's sad to say, but it's what's gotten through a lot of Victorians and other people in the country through these lockdowns. But first, Pat, we've got a bit of fishing news.
We do. There's more than just earthquakes that's happened this week, Redmond. Australia Border Force out of Cape George picking up ghost nets over a 16-hour period, 10 Ks of netting. Can you talk us through ghost nets, what they are, and the effect they have in the environment?
Yeah, it's a lot of netting. Well over 10 kilometres they picked up, which is, you think about it, 10 kilometres of just pure nets. Like it's a very, very large distance of netting. And it, before I get into what it is, it can entangle in all sorts of marine life, such as like your turtles, your dolphins,
whales,
birds, dugongs, you name it. It can kill that. But not only can it kill our wildlife, it can also kill us humans. And with trailer boats and what they are now, traveling out of Mallacoota and doing, the reason I say Mallacoota, Pat, because you're stationed there and we're going to talk about that soon. But Mallacoota, people are launching there and they're traveling out to the shelf to chase these lakes entrance, these Mallacoota swordfish as well as lakes entrance. It's a long way out. It's 100 kilometres they're traveling out to sea. And netting in the water that we're traveling at speeds that we do, if you run into an entangled net and it, like, say, a big ball of it, it could literally send you from 40 knots to stop and put you on your backside pretty bloody quickly and do some serious damage to your engine. And being, say, 80 kilometres offshore or 100 or even 40, it's a long way to get in with no engine or if damage does happen. But what it is it's just, like, pretty self-explanatory. It's netting. So it's...
It just floats.
It just floats.
Either it's been caught and snagged on reefs or fishermen have just dumped it over the side.
100%, and it's sad to say that fishermen do dump it over the side, but they do. And I know certain distances offshore, there are areas where you can dump stuff, so people doing illegal and non-illegal things. But yeah, they've done a tremendous job, Australian Border Force, picking up all that netting. So if you are out on the boat and you do see something in the water, do your best to pick it up. And if you can't do it, because let's be honest, Pat, you and I can't go out there and pick up 10 kilometers of netting in your and I boat, but you can make a phone call and the right people can go there and actually do what needs to be done. So well done to Australian Border Force.
How did you survive the earthquake? Were you sheltering under a table? I did laugh during the week seeing a few of the memes sort of flowing around. You know, Victoria, we will rebuild, and there's a deck chair that's turned over in the backyard.
Well, for me, and I hate to say this, but for me, I didn't feel the earthquake. I didn't feel a single thing. We're going to talk about Bassy Abbey pumping in a minute, but I was out with Kano, a good friend of mine, and we were out pumping Bassy Abbeys, and I reckon I'm the only person on the planet, in Victoria, sorry, that didn't feel this earthquake. I don't know, because there was no structure around me, nothing like that, but Kane and I got to the car, and we walked back to the car, and 9:15 was the earthquake, I'm pretty sure, 9:15. I got a phone call at 9:17 from Kari, my partner, ringing me going, something just happened in the house, Aaron. I don't know what's happened. I said, what do you mean? And she goes, the house is just shaking. Like it was, and I'm going, you lost the plot, mate. Like, what is wrong with you? Kane and I are literally laughing our heads off. And I'm like, what? She goes, oh, maybe it was just a big truck that comes past. I'm like, Kari, we live in a court. in Ocean Grove. If a truck comes past our house at that sort of speed or that big, it's not meant to be there anyways. You're in trouble. So I literally didn't feel a single thing. She had the house, whole house shaking. She thinks it was making weird noises. So I literally scrolled onto Facebook. I said, hold on, I need a check for you. So what do? Scroll down on Facebook, the most reliable news source you can find.
Absolutely. If you want COVID news, that's a great way place to go get misinformation.
Or earthquake news, but it was actually on par this one. So it was, I reckon there was about 10,000 statuses in the space of 20 seconds relating back to the earthquake, and I had to ring her back and apologize. So she did feel the earthquake. I didn't feel a single thing, but how'd you go? You were in Mallacoota, obviously. Did you feel it down there?
No, I don't think maybe it'll hit Mallacoota next week. Very sleepy little town, beautiful Mallacoota, but no. There's actually a few campers that had mentioned it later that morning, which I'm not sure. I'd like to feel like I understand.
They felt it in the bottom end of New South Wales. They felt
Canberra. Absolutely amazing.
And you felt nothing like me.
Let's get back to, you're talking about yabbies. It is school holidays for a lot of people right around the country, and it's a wonderful activity to engage in with your kids to get into fishing. It's a great bait, particularly around estuary systems and off the beach, but it's also something that you can do that you can immediately get a result from. Kids can see you're collecting bait and they have a great time doing it.
It is actually hard work for the bloke on the pump. So if you're out there taking the kids, mum or dad, put the kids on the pump because it's much easier. But I, like I said, I did it during the week and I went down to get some bass yabbies and nippers, we like to call them, and we're going to chase the brim with them, which we actually had no success on the brim, but we actually had more fun in pumping the yabbies. Now, you can pick a pump up from it's going to be one of those things. If you're just going in on a holiday doing it a once off, I wouldn't be going to spend $200 on a pump. It's 40, 50 bucks from a tackle store, $60. You can pick a pump that's going to do the job on the day. It might not last forever, but it's going to work really, really well. So a bass yabby pump or a nipper pump or a bait pump, whatever you want to call it, everyone calls it different things. They are cheap, but like you said before, extremely fun to keep the kids occupied, because every pump that goes onto the ground after you push it out of the end of the pump, it literally has mud that shoots out in water, and you get your bass yabbies, your worms, your fish fly out, but they can actually go through that mud as well and find more creatures like crabs and yabbies. And what you'll find is behind you, you'll have a trail of seagulls or birds picking up the scraps that is literally following behind that you miss. And the amount of stuff you miss, being someone like myself looking for just bass yabbies, is tremendous. And the kids will have a ball pulling it apart. And then later on in the day, you can head down to Lake Tyres, or you can head to the Barwon River Estuary or wherever you are, use the bass yabbies or the little green clicker ones, the nipper ones, and catch yourself some good fish. Flathead, big brim, trevally, salmon, you name it, you're going to be able to catch it. Everything eats bass yabbies. I don't know why, because I don't know how good they go catching them under the sand or whatnot, Pat, but they're one of the best baits going around. So they work really, really well. And this school holidays, it doesn't matter how windy it is either. You can head into the shallow waters around pretty much any estuary, find those holes that you're looking for. They're just little, I guess, 5-cent pieces, not even the size of that, and just find it and start pumping away. And the kids will literally have a ball picking everything they possibly can out of the sand that you pump out for them.
Redmond, I've spent the last week and a bit camping at Mallacoota, the beautiful foreshore camp park. Now, I've never been to Mallacoota before. You and I have spoken about it on the show because you've been there and you've spent time there, you've fished there. After spending a week and a half here, thereabouts, I just love the place. It is.
You literally rang me during the week and just said, why haven't I been here before?
It is just magnificent. And it was quite incredible driving in. And you can certainly see how once you get to Mallacoota, as those fires came through in, what was it, 2019, how challenging that would have been. It's one road in, one road out. And once you're surrounded, they weren't getting out. It was amazing to see some of the photos of the army and the boats that they had coming in, picking people up to take them out. And then to see, how many houses it had taken, the houses that had been spared. But it is one of the most picturesque places I've ever been. The lake system through Mallacoota is incredible. Like, if you're interested in the outdoors, whether it be walking, beach work, fishing lakes, it's here. If you want to fish offshore, you've got Gabo Island, which isn't far at all offshore. It's probably a kilometre from the beach and very, very accessible via the boat ramp at Mallacoota, which can be dangerous, and Aaron will talk about that in a little bit. But it's so accessible. That foreshore caravan park where I'm staying now has powered and non-powered sites right throughout it, great for caravans, great for camping. But it's also got camping sites that are right on the water that have their own private jetties. So you can camp at Mallacoota and have your boat moored literally in front of your campsite. It is really incredible. And there's so few places, there's so few places right around the country that you can actually do this. And it is perfectly set up in Mallacoota to do this. So access to the lake system, it's actually opened at the moment. So it's tidal. So you have the tide moving in and out throughout the day.
Thanks for answering my next question.
So it's not always open, but it is at the moment. So you do have to pay attention to where you're driving. You can't, like my old man who dad's been up here as well, he's taken the little 4 meter punt and just drove straight through what would have probably half a meter of water, flat knacker, and they hit the sandbar. So that was rather humorous to see. But it's incredible. Great facilities for launching into the lake system. And there's three different boat ramps that I've driven past so far. There's one right at the caravan park. There's one further up, which gives you access to the sort of the top part of the lake system, and a place called the Narrows, which is a really good place to fish. And we've had great success with brim and flathead through there. And then the boat facility to launch into the ocean is more challenging. Certainly you need to know what you're doing, but it's really well set up. It can be affected by swell, so that's one thing to think about, but it is phenomenal. I've just been so impressed by this little place. I'd urge anyone, once we get out of the current predicament that we're in, and if we're still only able to travel within the state, make Mallacoota your next stop, because it's probably a bit over 6 hours, 6.5 hours from Melbourne with a stop. So it's a decent trek, but it is so worthwhile because there's so many incredible places to go and adventure.
Now, just to go back to that the boat ramp side of things, just going to, on a fishing side, I've been an offshore fisherman myself, it can be a prick of a ramp. I'll be honest with you. You can have a little bit of sand build up, but not that, but more importantly, you can have swell.
And Bastion Point is where this ramp is. And it was hotly debated when it was initially put in, because it has affected the surf off that Mallacoota inlet point. But it would be incredibly dangerous if that rock wall wasn't set up there. But you're going to talk about this in a second, but really experienced anglers have fallen foul to this.
Yeah, there has. And there was an abalone angler that went out over last year. Multiple boats have been gone over there at Mallacoota, which is, you just got to respect it. Let's be honest. If you get there and a local says, what are you doing? Don't go out, because if you don't know it, make sure you speak to the right people that do, and they'll give you the advice that you do need, because if an abalone guy's going over out of that area, you know that, look, you probably should be a little bit more mindful of where you are, because those boys know that joint back to front and inside out, because they do it all day, every day, and have for a long period of time. But to go back to the fishing, so I know people want to know, have you caught anything? Have you actually pulled your finger out? Have you caught anything?
You wouldn't believe it. I don't always need you holding my hand to catch fish. So I spoke about the Narrows, which is slightly further up the Mallacoota Inlet. It's basically you go to your left, essentially, and it's quite narrow, funnily enough. It's a pretty easy to remember name.
Description like myself.
And we've cast, sort of 3-4 inch soft plastics into the riverbanks, particularly in the afternoons where the sort of rock walls are, as that sort of sun beams onto them, heats them up. The floodies seem to have sat there, and we've done really well with sort of fish up to 70 centimetres in length. Just that slow retrieve, it's almost edging it off the bottom of the surface, kicking up a little bit of sand and silt, and whack. So that's been terrific. We've caught tailor, we've caught Australian salmon, and plenty of brim. There's been stacks of brim around. So reports from sort of the local tackle shop weren't terrific. They said there's salmon and brim and not much else, but we've had great fish on the flathead. We fished offshore, was it Thursday morning before the wind got up in the afternoon, and went and had a look around Gabo Island. And sort of we hit 40 metres of water, flatties, and sort of edged out sort of 10 metres at a time when we sort of drifted off them. And that was, you know, that seemed to work pretty well. So much time for this place that you really need to put some time into and to think about as your next destination. There's a golf course there. It's such a wonderful place. And the locals are so friendly. You know, there's been arguably no one more affected by COVID than local communities like Mallacoota, who before COVID hit had dealt with the insane fire incidents that occurred in 2019. So if we can support these local places like Mallacoota with the tourism dollars, Redmond, it's only a good thing, and there's so many incredible places to go and explore. So, yeah, just terrific.
Before we go to the break, when are you actually coming back, or are you coming back? Because we've got stuff to do.
I'm not sure at the moment. We're here for another few days. The weather sort of gets poorer Wednesday, so I'm thinking
it's probably going to work. Look very good at the start of next week. It's starting to look very good. So if I get let out on Monday, I might even come join you down there for a couple of days.
You might have to come. I'm thinking Lakes Entrance and then maybe even sort of working our way down to Wilson's Promontory, which I've never spent a huge amount of time there. And the kids have just absolutely loved it. Like, if you haven't thought about camping, it's something that you should really consider. You know, our kids have absolutely loved it, and they hadn't camped before because they're playing all day. They're not sitting in front of their screens. So when they hit their head hits the pillow at 7 o'clock, they're knackered. They're gone. They're down. You know, like it's been a great thing for our family to do. And we were lucky enough before the Surf Coast went into lockdown that we'd gone, you know, a few days beforehand. But when it's possible, you know, whatever state you're in, look at those different rural destinations. And I couldn't encourage anyone to get into camping more than that, because it's been great for us.
Well, there you have it. We give you a dream boating destination at the start of the show. You're telling press patties with Mallacoota. You've been listening to Real Adventures. There's plenty more to come after the break. We've got the social club where we answer your questions from social media. We'll see you shortly.
You're listening to Real Adventures with Patrick Dangerfield and Aaron Hadgood.
Welcome back to Real Adventures. Before we get into the social club, we're going to take a look at what's biting around the country and cover each and every state. Let's get to Victoria first. Pakenham Lakes, they're producing some massive rainbows at the moment, Redmond. Obviously, this is a waterway that's been stocked by Vic Fisheries. So there's been some really good trout that have been released. The best way to target them, and what are you hearing?
Power bait. You can't beat dirty old bait, if you ask me, Pat. Get yourself some power bait, especially with the kids and that. They can't throw your divers net around all day. So bit of bait, throw it out, then have the kids working a nice little Rapala diver or whatnot along the side, and I'm sure you're going to catch those fish. They're stocked there, and it's kept a lot of people occupied, all the stock lakes throughout that Melbourne. You got Albert Park and all the likes there. So they've done really well, fisheries. You also got the Otway River producing the Otway Rivers, I should say, not specific, the Otway Rivers producing loads of small brown trout. So they're the stuff that Pat and his old man like heading down chasing with the salters in around the Cumberland River and the like. So also off the back of that, if you actually do a bit of bush bashing and push up further and deeper into the actual Otways in itself, we know Ben Cunnington from the North Melbourne Football Club, he heads up the back there. You've got Dan Mackerel from Colac, who's a regular guest on the Real Adventures show. He always heads up the back there, and they get some really, really big trout, Pat, some really good brown, wild brown trout. And
Wild Dog Creek, there's some wonderful places.
Yep. So don't think that there's one place suits all. But so just look on, jump on your phone onto your satellite, have a look at, make sure you can fish there. And like I said, some places, I actually fished with Dan Mackerel a couple of weeks, and he said, "Oh, Ben Cunnington, bloody." He does some serious bush bash, and he pushes through some trees, and he does – maybe that's why he's half decent through the midfield, because he's pushing through trees to get to these trout. So it's not the easiest walk, but if you want to do something different and you've got a bit of time to kill like a lot of us have at the moment and you're allowed to do so, go for a look. Jump on your satellite on your phone, and I'm sure you're going to have a really good time finding – not just actually getting – like catching the fish, but even finding that stream. It's bloody good fun.
I reckon that's a great point, because like near on all of those streams – 150 odd years ago, trout were released into.
Yep.
And they are full of them. They're not huge trout. This is not fishing New Zealand or anything, because there's not huge and ginormous water flow bringing in, a huge amount of food for them to eat. So they don't get massive, but it's an adventure in itself. So as you said, your Google Maps are as good as anything to look at streams that have sort of less coverage overhead, which enables you to cast a bit further. It's a great thing to do. And it's dotted right along those waterways. Lake Eildon, Redmond.
Yeah, Lake Eildon, with regional Victoria over the last couple of weeks being allowed to travel through the regions, it's fished very, very well. And we've missed a lot of cod season, Pat, let's be honest, we have, and it fished really, really well. And a lot of boats went, and a lot of times when that happens is it actually shuts down a little bit at the bite because they come a bit timid. But maybe because there hasn't been many anglers there, that it didn't actually happen. And there was a lot of big fish caught. Soft plastics being the dominant method, with obviously many other options you can do. But plastics worked really, really well. And the fish reached well over that meter mark at times. And a lot of that 80 to a meter. So well worth heading down there, heading to Lake Eildon if you can. Heading to your old neck of the woods, Pat, South Australia.
Yeah, the Limestone Coast is experiencing a huge run of Australian salmon at the moment, with multiple schools of fish literally in their thousands cruising up and down, giving anglers great value for time. It's a great way, once again, if you want to get your kids into fishing, it's if you hit those schools, you're going to catch something. Once again, they're best cooked and eaten fresh. So as soon as you've caught them, bleed them straight away, because you don't want that blood bleeding into the flesh, and then they're not a great tasting fish that way. But they're great fun for kids.
And they make a bloody good bait too, Pat, that a lot of anglers target the salmon for bait too. So it's one thing they do make. The only way, I, in my opinion, to make them taste good is after you put them on a hook and catch a big gummy shark, because a bit of flake tastes beautiful. But Moreton Bay's fished really well too, with something a little bit different to report from there. Sweet lips, good signs early in the season. So fingers crossed that in the next few weeks, and as that water temp comes up a bit, we start to see a few more of them coming over the side, Pat.
New South Wales, massive schools of small bluefin have made appearances wide out of the shelf between Bermagui and Eden right now. Small lures or casting surface lures at them have been working really well. But they're only small, only to that sort of 8 kilo mark. So when are we going to start to see bigger fish through there, Aaron?
I don't want to say it, but I'm hoping I'm hoping we haven't missed our annual run of bluefin up the New South Wales coast, because Sydney's been locked down. When I say Sydney, I'm talking New South Wales, etc. Been locked down.
And you can't fish more than 3 miles offshore.
Yeah, so I don't know. It's going to be, I'm hoping they're still there. The yellowfin bite continues there too, so I can't keep reporting about yellowfin. That's why I took them out this week, but I still find myself sitting here talking about them because they're just a wonderful fish. So like I said, they've got your options, head out to the shelf. And the thing is with New South Wales, like if you were to fish out of Portland right now, during the peak season, you quite often you fish that 8 to 12 kilo, get a bit bigger fish here and there, where you do, and then all of a sudden it jumps up to your 100 kilo barrels. Where New South Wales, when you get that big run of fish along that continental shelf, all of a sudden you get a 40 kilo fish, 120 kilo fish, 20 kilo fish, and 80. So be mindful if you are out there and you are finding 8 kilo fish. If you see something in the distance, it's worth going to check it out because it could be a bigger school of fish. Just quickly, Pat, the Georges River on prawns fished really well. Brim flooded blackfish were chewing really well. Also, they're pretty much on plastics. Sorry, we're fishing really well with plastics being the best. WA, slow jigging for jewfish have produced some big fish. And the key word there is not fast jigging, it's slow pitch jigging. So it's those thicker jigs that work a lot better when you work them slow. Some big snapper off Perth Metro too, coming off the beach to that 90 centimetre mark. And once again, the squid's been that better bait. Tassie, Georges Bay fished really well for salmon this week. What they were doing was the salmon were pushing the bait fish up into the shallows, so you could actually visually see these fish feeding quite ferociously, and just casting small plastic into them, like just your sort of 3 to 4 inches small jig heads, and also metal lures, as we know, your 35 gram lasers or your atomics, they work really good too. Plenty, and the salmon are big, around that 2 kilo mark either way, so fishing easily to catch if you want something to do. Derwent River fished really well once again in Tassie. We reported this a few times over the past few months, Pat. Trout up to the 9-pound mark on fly and hard bodies. And last one, our good mate Dennis Daly from Fishing Mission. He bloody loves his mackerel because they turned up again for him this week. And he
huge numbers.
A monster mackerel during the week. So if you are in that area and you can get out on his boat, give him a call or search him up at Fishing Mission on social media or on Google, and you'll find him and be able to catch yourself some huge mackerel.
All right, let's get to the social club. We take your questions from social media. If you've got a question for Aaron or I, make sure you shoot it into our Real Adventures socials, or better yet, download our Real Adventures app. It is free to download at the App Store. First one is from Tim Richards. Pre-made rigs versus making your own, Aaron. I know you prefer making your own, but I have little time on my hands. I'm not great at knots. Where are the best ones to buy from?
There's so many different rigs you can go out there and buy, and they do cost money. And funny enough, we actually, not that this is a plug or a little bit of a plug, Soul Guide actually does sell mine and Gwayne's rigs, more of Gwayne's at the moment. I've got to catch up a bit. Gwayne's been on top of that. He's got plenty of rigs on there that actually how he fishes. So you can buy them on the Soul Guide website.
So you have rigged these up yourself?
We've done them. Yeah, I've done 75 whiting rigs that I need to send to Craig, and Gwayne's done, he's got shark toothy rigs. He's got, they're all rigged from Gwayne, no one else but himself. And if you follow Gwayne specifically on Instagram, you'll be able to see that he does them himself in front of him. He crimps everything. He goes into massive detail when he actually makes his rig. So they're not just going to be your BCF, who knows where they've come from sort of rig. So they do work well, but there's plenty of pre-made rigs online. Social media is probably a good place to follow them. There's a lot of fishing pages that actually share different brands and whatnot. You got Black Magic. I know there's Reedy's rigs. There's all sorts of different rigs that you can buy. But I'll always say this, always try and learn yourself, because you don't know who's tied that knot. Unless it's someone that does it themselves, like Gwayne, or someone that puts the actual time and love into them, I would probably venture to. But watch the rigs, learn how to use them. There's plenty of videos on the Soul Guide website. But you just, some if you of the don't, stuff they come if, with, Pat, like I'm very don't, hesitant with.
But if you don't trust yourself and you haven't put the time in, what's wrong with buying pre-made? Are you, like, if you're catching bream or you're catching whiting versus, like, I understand if you're going to go fish for tuna and you're fishing for 120 kilo fish, you're spending all this money to get to there versus something that's perhaps of less important on the scale of your bucket list of fish.
So the problem that I would recommend is, if you look at this is why I'm saying there's rigs that work specific for certain groups. So like Reedy's rig, and that they do a great rig, and they've got specific followers who actually support what they do, and they're consistently using the rig and catching fish, not just the brand selling themselves. Where if you go to a tackle store right now, and you and I have spoken this on the show many of times, and just to give you an example, if you buy a lure, it'll say this catches salmon, Australian GTs, bass, Taylor. It'll cover 55 different species, but yet all of a sudden you'll buy a brim rig that also catches flathead, it catches pinkies, it catches this, and you go to fish where you are now in Mallacoota in that beautiful lake, and that rig's got 30-pound leader on it, and you got a size, say size 4 or size 3 hook on it. It just doesn't, just because the packet says brim, you need to be smart. Buy something that has real angler's experiences, and that you can get you out there and catch fish. That's my recommendation.
Congratulations, Tim. You get a Real Brand fishing top and hat this week. Send us a direct message, because you're the only question that we can get through given our country whip around. You're listening to Real Adventures. We've got our grand final review after the break coming up. Stay tuned for that.
Gearing up for Dometic. Always stay relaxed and hydrated wherever your adventure takes you with Dometic's rugged drinkware.
It's time for gearing up for Dometic. Enjoy the great outdoors with all the comforts of home with Dometic. Redmond, I've been using plenty of Dometic gear throughout the week at Mallacoota. I've been staying in the blow-up tent. Kids have loved it. Mards and I have loved it because it's got the dividing the dividing wall in the main.
Well, that's going to stop your kids from getting through.
They've actually slept in. They've slept on one side of the tent. It's amazing, and we've slept on the other. And I think it's because they've been so tired during the day that there's been no time for anything else. We had the CFX 75, the cooler in the front part of the tent. We're on a powered site.
couple of cold Carlton drafts in there for me, Pat, when I get it there in a few weeks, in a week.
Couple of packs, new axes. So it's been it's been good. But no, we're going to talk about the 2021 AFL Grand Final, Redmond.
Yeah, we are. I'm going to do a bit of our producer Joel Brooksy work here. He loves his footy and he wants to know a few questions, for the big game this weekend.
Well, he loves his Western Bulldogs as well. So it is, of course, the Melbourne Demons versus the Western Bulldogs.
Yeah, but before we get into the game of who actually wins, we're going to do a big review, like we said. Now, big questions coming your way, Pat. I've got three written down, so hopefully that's enough. But basically, we're going to break it down from your from the forward line of each side into the midfield, and you're going to do – well, I'm not going to break it down. You are, because you're meant to know what you're doing. So Dogs forwards versus Melbourne's backs. Take us through the key positions here.
Well, it's a fascinating sort of setting of matchups. You've got Jake Lever, the interceptor, who probably plays as a pure defender, certainly second fiddle to how Stephen May plays as that lockdown defender, takes the number one forward. And what it allows to do, allows Lever to do, is really read the game, read the play, intercept mark, and then set up so much of Melbourne's attack. Christian Salem adds to that. He's not really there to defend. He's there to provide a great run and penetration from halfback with that left foot, which is incredibly dangerous. So that's going to be a really important focus for the Western Bulldogs. You don't want him getting 30 touches off halfback, because if he does, then I would think it's going to be very, very difficult for them to win the game. So there's Salem's run and spring off halfback. There's Lever's intercept marking. Now, it's one thing to say these are the identifiables. It's another thing to actually execute and restrict it, because if there's easy ball movement and low pressure through the midfield, especially with that Western Bulldogs midfield, then the artillery in the front half of the Western Bulldogs is also really strong. You've got Norton, who probably flies harder at the ball in the air than any other forward in the game. So he'll crash packs and give the Western Bulldogs small forwards great opportunity to score. And it is directly opposed to what Melbourne want to do in intercept mark. So that in itself, I think, is going to be fascinating to see who can execute their game style more than the other. And then you've got Tim English, who will roll between drifting deep forward and then providing ruck relief up the ground. I'd ruck Tim when he's fresh and jumping, and when he gets a bit more fatigued, then he'll drift forward and you could have him as that other target forward of the play. Because the big one has been Steph Martin. And this is what, you know, teams get critical, or people get critical of teams recruiting older players. But Steph Martin's value to this team, to get them into a position where they're in a grand final now, and his importance to try and nullify arguably the player within this game that has the most difficult matchup, is the Western Bulldogs trying to stop Max Gawn. And I had front row seats to Max's incredible game in the prelim, where I think he had 20 touches and kicked 5. He was phenomenal. So as wonderful as Petrarca is, as penetrating and as a greater clearance player as Clayton Oliver is, Max Gawn's importance to that team is just critical.
Just before you get into the midfield, because you've ruined my list, going back to the Melbourne back line. Now, we all seen 2 weeks ago, May injured. He's injured. He might not be playing this week if it wasn't a grand final. How far in a percentage of his fitness would he not play that key? Like, he's obviously one of the most important players. They're taking the punt with him. They need him on the game. They need him on the ground for the day. It's a bit of a risk. If he gets injured, Norton could run mayhem.
Look, it is. It's a good call. I actually asked him after the game. I said, how is it? And he said, just some neural awareness. So the fact that he could still continue to play but just have awareness around there, there's no doubt he would have spent a huge amount of time over the last 2 weeks on the physio bench. loosening his back up, loosening his glutes, to take probably a bit of pressure off those hammies. Now they will not take a risk in a grand final with a player that's injured, particularly with a hamstring. That being said, Geelong did it with Paul Chapman. I think it was in their second grand final. We actually played the game with a hamstring strain, but it wasn't through the main belly. It was more lateral, so you're able to get through it. But he's a critical player to Melbourne's success. So I don't reckon he may not be pinging those 50-metre kicks through the corridor, but he still has a really important role to play.
Go to the midfield. You did mention Max Gawn and the importance that he has on the game, and you've mentioned Steph Martin, but let's head to where you were heading with the midfield. You've got Petrarca and obviously Oliver, and Oliver, I'll tell you what, he looks like a man mountain on the field. He's running around, giving literally all teams hell at the moment, as well as Petrarca sneaking forward, kicking goals. But then you've got the Bont and you've got Liberatore. How do the Dogs overcome that midfield with those boys? Because their midfield as of lately been a little bit better, but it wasn't red hot going into the last, say, 6 weeks of the AFL season.
It wasn't. Their form line was really quite poor. And then the first final hit, and they obviously lost that game. And then from then, it's just been won that game, and then it's just ignited them. It's a fascinating matchup with both midfields because you could probably argue, all right, it's even at the start. Petrarca, Oliver, and you've got Liberatore and Bontempelli and McRae. McRae will get it 35 times. Bontempelli has that ability to – he'll only get it 20 – I say only, 25 to 30, what me mortals would love to have. But it's his impact forward of centre that's of greatest importance and power to the Western Bulldogs. But Petrarca will give you that as well. He's the ability to hit the scoreboard, to take contested marks. So those two are on par. Where the midfield matchups, I reckon, get really interesting is the depth of each team. Now, you can't get to this stage in the season without having depth. But that Viney matchup versus Liberatore, I think, will be a fascinating one. I would expect that would be the matchup because Liberatore's started games so well. He really has been the igniter for the Dogs. But Viney's work, I think, throughout this season has gone certainly under the radar because of the success of Lever and May, of Max, of Oliver and Petrarca. But Viney's had a wonderful year. Even though he's missed a fair bit of footy with injury, he's been really important. He's that dogged inside midfielder that gets 7 to 10 tackles a game. So he versus Liberatore, I think, will be interesting. And then you've got not the peripheral players, but the second run midfielders that will run through there. So the depth there is important. The Max Gawn matchup is critical. Steph Martin needs to play the game of his life because Max is in form. He's got it in him, Steph. He's been a great ruckman right throughout his career. So it's there for him. He can do it, I think, but he's going to have to play out of his skin because Max drifting forward is really going to test the Western Bulldogs defence, particularly, and we'll talk about this now, particularly when you've got Brown playing as that lead-up 200-centimetre key back. Yep. You've got Cordy and you've got
Keith. I'm the journalist here. I'll help you out.
Sorry. Who comes in for Ryan Gardner, who unfortunately gets omitted for the grand final, which is terrible, but it's probably the right matchup. Keith, I think, has had an outstanding season. It's on the edge of when you come back from hammies, that sort of 3 week mark, but they need him to play and they need him to play well. Because you've got McDonald up there as well, who's played exceptionally well as a forward for Melbourne. So
Bailey Fritz as well, you've got him who is a marking forward, but also on the ground too. You've got Pickett. Melbourne's forward is elite.
And that's why the Western Bulldogs do need to intercept Mark, but that won't necessarily come from Keefe or will come from
Cordy,
because they'll have their hands full as it is trying to defend Brown and McDonald.
Yeah.
Now, when Gawn drifts down there, this is where English is going to have to work back. This is where no doubt Steph Martin is going to have to work back hard and make sure that Max can't just drift across packs, take contested marks and kick goals.
How fit is Gawn? Because we see him kicking the footy through the sticks, getting goals. Everyone can run forward. Is he run back? Is he pushed back?
No, he is exceptionally fit. He's an incredible athlete. He's gotten better as his career has continued on. So he loves his bike riding. So that's a critical matchup. Then if you're Melbourne, you're definitely putting work into Caleb Daniel. The way he work a ball off half back, he kicks it as well as any player that's ever kicked an AFL. Sharon saved the game against Brisbane with that inside kick, which I think he meant it. He has that incredible vision. Yeah. So promises to be an incredible
game.
Players
can't see him against the grass real well, Pat. That's why he's only a little fella.
He's a little fella, but boy, he can play. He's going to have his work cut out with him though, because as you said, Pickett's down there and Bailey Fritch, who's been a goal scoring forward.
Now, I'm going to do my call just quickly. I think Melbourne are too good, and it's a bit of a hope for that because my partner goes for Dogs. I can't have her too happy that night. So they should be happy they just made it. So I'm going to throw – I think Melbourne generally too good all over the park, even the way you've explained it. Where are you heading?
Well, if they play like they did against us, that's as good a side as I can remember playing. You know, that's Richmond at their best. That's you know, Hawthorn at their very best. Geelong at their very best when I was playing in Adelaide. Like, you know, this is a very, very good side.
Yeah.
But this is a grand final. This is a game of ebbs and flows, and you've got to have your game talking at the right point. And the Western Bulldogs, they'll believe every bit they can. If I'm tipping, I'm thinking Melbourne win, and with Max's form line, you know, if I'm tipping a Norm Smith, I'm thinking it's going to be him. So it's going to be an incredible game that, you know, at a wonderful venue in Optus Stadium that we can't wait to see, Aaron.
Looking forward to the game this afternoon. It's going to be an absolute cracker. That was Gearing Up, a little bit different Gearing Up, but it was for Dometic Mobile Living Made Easy. Don't go anywhere because we're going to finish up the show after the break.
You're listening to Real Adventures with Patrick Dangerfield and Aaron Hadgood.
Welcome back to Real Adventures. It's time for Red's Tip, and it's pretty simple. I'm taking it this week. Red's Tip, if you're heading to a place like Mallacoota, for example, and you're looking to upgrade your boat or to add a few little tips and tricks to it, fishing with a Minn Kota out of a region like this is just a must. I can't talk enough about how it's improved, certainly our catch rate, being able to slow trawl within metres of cliffs and the edges of banks without having the outboard on spooking any fish has been one of the great things that I installed on my Stabycraft. So I've got an 80-pound thrust auto-deploy motor. Could have probably gone the 55-pound, but they're going to start at sort of that $2,000 mark depending on sales and when you're sort of looking to buy them. But I can't recommend it enough if you're going to fish extensively throughout lake systems. And then even more with spot lock and things like that, you can start to use these motors offshore. So Red's Tip for the week, if you're fishing places with extensive lake systems, then think about installing a Minn Kota.
Just stealing the gaff off you this week, Pat. It's now time for the flying gaff, and it's going to a commercial fisher who has received a suspended jail sentence for catching more than 150 kilo of snapper from a protected zone in a calculated, deliberate late night act. So it is coming to you, to that commercial fisher, that gaff, nice and sharp, because that is disgusting.
Thanks for listening to our grand final edition of Real Adventures this morning. We hope you enjoyed the show. We'll see you next week.